11. People of Lead Church, thank you for coming out for this emergency town meeting. I know that we usually hold these meetings in the church, not the tavern. We chose to hold it here at the Rotted Stump because the church is full of the wounded, and given what we all went through this morning, we thought everyone would appreciate gathering someplace where they could get a stiff drink.
The man's name was Gibbons. He was one of the local merchants, a short man, but he had a larger man's voice, bearing, and belly.
Friends, as we all know, there has been an attack on our village. Many people, including the entire militia, were injured in the act of defending our property, and now they lay asleep and helpless in the church, leaving us and our property undefended. We're here to figure out what went wrong.
After a long pause, someone said,
Dragons attacked us.
Yes, Gibbons said. Yes, that's right. Dragons attacked us. But what I'm getting at is, why? Why did dragons attack us? We need to figure out what we did to draw the dragons down on us so we can keep them from coming back. Because, friends, I think if we learned anything today, it is that we are not prepared to fight dragons. Everyone who tried is over in the church. Even the wizards couldn't help us much.
A horrific sound flooded the inn. Everyone who heard it cringed involuntarily. All conversation, all interactions, all rational thought came to a halt while every adult in earshot received an urgent message from their own central nervous systems. A message that said, find the source of that noise and make it stop. Humans are genetically tuned to abhor the sound, a sound originally meant to alert parents that their offspring were in danger, but which later got repurposed as a weapon by those offspring. It was the shriek of an angry girl. Everyone turned and faced Honor, and mostly saw the inside of her mouth as she persisted in screaming at the top of her lungs. She was sitting on the corner of a fully loaded bench, but all of the adults sharing the bench with her leaned away from the source of the spine-melting noise, giving her more room to flail her arms. The only one in the tavern who didn't seem bothered by the noise was Runt, who sat on the floor next to her, looking up with an air of mild curiosity. After several seconds, Honor's angry shriek gave way to a raging torrent of words.
The wizards weren't helping us! How can you think the wizards were helping us? The wizards were helping the dragons!
The townsfolk all looked at each other wearily. None of the parents in the group had brought their children, but Honor had no adult to tell her she couldn't come, and it would be centuries before liquor laws would be invented. She was the only child in attendance, and, as such, had far more control of the situation than she understood. Gibbon said,
Now, dearie, that just doesn't make sense.
Like pretty much every other human being capable of understanding speech, Honor hated being told, now, and despised being called dearie. Being told that what she knew to be true made no sense did not help.
I know what I know, and I know what I saw,
Honor said.
I saw the dragons attacking the town, and I saw the wizards protecting them while they did it. Not making sense to you doesn't mean it didn't happen.
There were a few titters from the group. Like a stream of urine, an aggressive child can be amusing when it's aimed at someone else. Gibbons felt himself losing control of the room and asked,
Little girl, where are your parents?
The laughter stopped. A man frowned, then stood and spoke quietly into Gibbons' ear. Gibbons listened, bit his lip, looked at Honor, and said,
I'm very sorry.
Honor, isn't it?
As much as she'd hated being called dearie, she hated being called by her name even more when the person speaking had a note of pity in his voice.
I haven't seen you in quite a while,
Gibbons said.
You've certainly grown.
How would you know?
Honor asked.
I'm sitting down. In this crowd you can only see my head.
Gibbon said,
And your head has grown.
Then paused and turned red while the crowd enjoyed a small laugh at his expense.
I knew your father. He was a good man.
I sometimes do business with your brother. Fine boy. Where is he?
He's in the church, with the rest of the people the wizards cursed.
A woman seated in the middle of the throng said,
No, dear. One of the wizards told some of us they were just putting the injured to sleep.
By cursing them,
Honor said.
The wizards cursed them to sleep. I saw them do it.
Yes,
the woman said.
I suppose you could put it that way, but the wizard told me they'd done it so that they could rest and heal.
And stop attacking the wizard's dragons. The dragons that had hurt them in the first place.
Is that what happened to your brother?
Gibbons asked.
Was he hurt attacking a dragon?
Honor blushed and said,
No.
Gibbons brightened slightly and opened his mouth, clearly preparing to exploit this hole in her logic. Honor said,
He and Bishop Galbraith threw themselves over me to save me from arrows. They both got hit. One of the wizards watched it happen and did nothing to help any of us. Then another made them sleep with her magic.
Another of the local men spoke up.
I'm sorry that happened to your brother, but I saw the wizards trying to protect us and chase off the dragons.
Then they didn't do a very good job, did they?
Honor said.
Mr. Gibbons said that the entire militia is down. So are my brother and the bishop. All of the folks lying in the church right now got hurt while the wizards were protecting them.
You said you know what you saw,
the man said.
I know what I saw, too, and I saw the wizards trying to chase the dragons off.
Gibbons nodded.
Thank you, Seth. Very good. You see, Honor? He was out there, too, and he saw the wizards helping.
Honor said,
Maybe a few of the wizards were faking. Maybe they pretended to try to help us so that we wouldn't blame them and we wouldn't hurt their dragons.
Gibbons said,
I seriously doubt that, Honor.
Why? Did you see them helping? Did you watch them trying their hardest? Or were you just told it, and now you believe it because you want to?
Well, no, I didn't see them helping,
Gibbons admitted.
I was in the church most of the time. I didn't really see much, but others did. Everyone show of hands, how many of you really got a good look at what happened?
A disappointingly small number of people raised their hands, 15 at most. The majority of the villagers had hightailed it for cover at the first sight of dragons. Gibbons pressed on.
Okay, and of those of you with your hands up, how many of you agree with Seth that the wizards were trying to help us?
About a third kept their hands raised. The other two-thirds fidgeted in their chairs and made doubtful moaning noises.
And how many think I'm right?
Honor asked. The hands that had been up went down, and a roughly equal number came up, hesitantly, accompanied by more fidgeting. All in all, 5 people out of well over 100 publicly agreed with Honor. But she used child math. Having any adult agree with her meant that she was definitely 100% right. Gibbons looked less convinced than ever of Honor's opinion, or anyone else's, including his own.
But Honor, why? You say that the wizards wanted the dragons to attack us. Why would the wizards want that? And if they did, why use dragons? We've seen what they're capable of. They're more than powerful enough to destroy the whole town themselves if they want.
Honor thought for a moment, then said,
I don't know.
If this gave Gibbons any satisfaction, it did not last long.
But,
Honor said,
If the wizards are as powerful as you say, why weren't they able to chase off the dragons any faster, or just kill them?
It was a good question, and Gibbons thought about it for a bit too long. The crowd got restless and started talking amongst themselves. Honor heard bits and pieces of many conversations.
Just made them madder. Called them idiots.
Turned into a dragon himself.
Gibbons said,
Okay. If we're honest, the best thing we can say for the wizards is that they helped us, but not very well.
And that they cast a sleeping spell on anyone who tried to fight their dragons,
Honor said.
They said it's a healing spell, and we don't know that the dragons were theirs.
The healing spell put them to sleep and made them stop fighting. and I know that the dragons are theirs because I've seen the pen where the wizards keep them."
Her statement affected the crowd in ways both profound and predictable. Honor had their undivided attention, and yet she had to shout to be heard.
"In a clearing, deep in the woods, north of our pasture, I saw the dragon pen, the biggest pen I've ever seen. The fence stretched into the sky like a roof to keep the dragons from flying away."
Gibbons asked, "And how do you know the wizards built this dragon pen?"
"Because there was a wizard there."
"In the clearing, deep in the woods, next to a great big pen full of dragons?"
"Yes."
"What were you doing there?"
"Tracking down one of our ewes. The wizard had stolen it."
Gibbons laughed. "One of your ewes came up missing, and you assumed that an evil wizard had stolen your sheep?" Many other adults laughed along with Gibbons. There are certain crimes that are not only wrong, but are also so ignominious that the act of accusing someone of them is laughably unrealistic and insulting. The idea that someone with magical powers would lower themselves to sheep rustling didn't seem reasonable.
"How many ewes did the wizard take?"
Gibbons asked. Honor said,
"One. For a while. I counted later, and it seemed like he put it back, or tricked me with his magic into thinking he did."
Gibbons laughed again.
"Young lady, why would a wizard use his powers to steal one of your ewes, then give it back?"
Honor said,
"I thought he meant to feed it to the dragons, but I didn't see that. I saw him with the sheep. I don't understand what he was doing. He was yelling and chasing it. It seemed like he wanted to wrestle it. He was abusing it, I guess you might say."
The laughter in the room stopped, but only after changing drastically in tone. There are certain crimes that are not only wrong, but are also so ignominious that the act of accusing someone of them makes them appear guilty, because, all joking aside, one would never accuse someone of that unless they were certain. Gibbon said,
"These are serious accusations, girl. We'll need to investigate for ourselves. Can you tell us how to get to this dragon pen you saw?"
"I'll take you there. Let's go."
"Gracious, no, dearie. We'll get a few of the men to go. I'm sure nobody'd ask you to go along."
"You don't have to ask,"
Honor said.
"I'll go. I can take you straight there."
"No, I'm sorry. There's no way to know what dangers we'll face."
"I know what dangers you'll face. I've faced them."
"Well, if you were able to make it on your own, a group of men should have no problem. You'll only slow us down. We won't have the time or the energy to take care of you, do you understand?"
Honor's face turned bright red. Her knuckles went white.
"Yes,"
Honor said.
"I understand, Mr. Gibbons."
Gibbons nodded, making the common mistake of thinking that understanding and agreeing were the same thing.
"Now we'll round up a party of volunteers, and then, after you've given us directions, we'll be on our way. We'll want to enter the woods before we reach the bastards' encampment. The dragons and the wizards are bad enough. We don't want Klooge on our hands as well."
Honor looked around the room at the adults who had dismissed her, then listened to her, then dismissed her again. They all listened to Gibbons now, all except one. Across the inn, standing just outside an open window, Hubert, the dung sifter, stood looking at Honor. He saw that she saw him. He smiled weakly and shook his head.
"Oh no! Klooge! Klooge!"
the voice shouted. Klooge smiled. Few things pleased him more than the sound of someone in distress, shouting his name, hoping for help that would probably not come. He stretched and yawned contentedly.
"Ah! Klooge!"
the voice continued.
"That's right," Klooge thought. "Let everyone know that you're afraid, and who's made you that way?"
Slowly, Klooge realized that he wasn't actually threatening anyone at the moment. He was lying on the pile of cowhides he used as a bed, under another cowhide he used as a blanket. His eyes snapped open. He saw the underside of the cowhides thrown over a wooden frame that he used as a tent. The voice called out again.
Kluge! Where's Kluge?
Kluge sat up and pulled on the cowhide he used as a shirt. He vowed to find whoever had woken him up and put them to sleep. He liked distressed voices shouting his name, looking for help, but not when they were looking for help from him. Kluge stepped out of the tent and nearly collided with a bastard. He wasn't a bastard, literally. Not as far as Kluge knew or cared. Kluge led a group of young men who called themselves the Bastards. To become a bastard, you only had to do whatever Kluge wanted, which mostly meant calling yourself a bastard, telling Kluge how tough he was, and playing a musical instrument. The last part was the easiest. Making any loud noise to a predictable rhythm counted as playing, and drums qualified as an instrument. Kluge's definition of a drum included anything that made a noise when struck, including people who had gotten on Kluge's nerves. Like any group that accepts pretty much anybody, the membership of the Bastards was made up entirely of young males who felt worthless and powerless. Guys who look at the creatures wriggling around in the mud and think, "He thinks he's better than me." The bastard who was risking getting drummed out this morning was Stretch, one of the older bastards. Stretch hadn't gotten his nickname for being particularly tall. Kluge gave him his name in honor of something he'd done to another man's ear during a fight. Stretch said,
"Kluge, Kluge, you're up! You've got to..."
Kluge punched Stretch in the face. Stretch flew backwards and then rolled in the dirt, clutching at his nose and moaning. In truth, Kluge hadn't hit him that hard, and they both knew it. But Kluge had standards, and giving him the impression that his initial attack had been anything less than devastating would be taken as an invitation to try harder.
"I'm sorry to disturb you, Kluge,"
Stretch said through his hands.
"But you gotta see this."
"What is it?" Kluge asked. "I don't see anything."
Stretch pointed behind Kluge's tent. The bastards had claimed a broad, flat space that sat along the side of the main road through the woods as their domain. It was wide, treeless, and overgrown with tall grass. But beyond that grass were several tents, the ash pile of a near nightly bonfire, and a barren, muddy patch the bastards had trampled. The grass provided a buffer zone between the camp and the road and gave the bastards something to hide in when attempting to ambush passersby. Kluge's tent, like all of the tents, faced away from the road and toward the woods. Stretch pointed behind the tent toward the expanse of wild grass, the road, and the rest of civilization. Kluge sneered, stepped around the tent, and froze. Three dragons were just standing there, eating the grass, oblivious to the world around them. When Kluge snapped out of the shock, he could see that all of the other bastards had already noticed the dragons. Many young men from the nearby villages would turn up each night for the bonfire and the music. They thought of themselves as members, and Kluge didn't say anything to make them think otherwise. Someday they might come in handy. But the real core of the bastards consisted of Kluge and six other guys: Stretch, Gripper, Pounder, and Heel Kick, all of whom were named for things they had done in fights, and LL. LL stood for Long Lobe. He'd been named in honor of something Stretch had done to him in a fight. The youngest member of the group was only Donnie. He got his name when another member named Donnie quit. Kluge could see the guys huddled behind trees and hunched down in the mud at the edge of the tall grass. Heel Kick shouted,
"Kluge! We need Kluge! He'll know what to do!"
Kluge proved him right by threatening Heel Kick with grievous bodily harm if he didn't shut up. Then Kluge stared at the dragons for a good long time. Their shoulders were about half again taller than his, their wings folded back on themselves, and their front claws pressed into the grass, supporting the front half of their bodies like legs. Their necks hung low to the ground as they ate their fill of the wild grass. As peaceful and docile as they acted, they radiated menace. Their skin was made up of thick, armored scales. Their teeth looked like ivory daggers. One of the dragons took a step forward, briefly lifting one of its rear feet above the height of the grass. It was the single most terrifying foot Kluge had ever seen. What on any other animal one might have referred to as toes, on these monsters looked like a mass of small, very muscular arms, tipped not with hands, but with toenails that were semi-translucent short swords. The sight of them filled Kluge's heart with fear. He had spent years trying to convince the people who knew him that he had neither a heart nor fear to fill it with, and had nearly convinced himself. If these things had this effect on him, he could only imagine how the bastards felt, or how ordinary villagers would react to the sight of them. Stretch said,
"They just showed up! What are we gonna do, Kluge?"
Kluge studied the look of fear on Stretch's face, looked at the dragons again, and said,
"Find some rope."